my lap and she's drinking champagne. Have white skin, got a satin eyes. I'm looking up into the sapphire sky. Well dressed man, waiting on the last plane. Standing in the gallows with my head in. Now I'm expecting all hell to break loose. People are crazy and times are strange. Locked in tight, I'm out of range. I used to care, but things have changed.
Well, the music fades out. Mike's yap and flapper comes up. Well, good morning, ladies and gentlemen. It's Mike down here in Arizona land. Your mind is your primary weapon. Today is the 17th of September, 2018. It's a Monday. You're tuned into Liberty Tree Radio. It's about 3-4 minutes or so after 8 a.m. Arizona time on Constitution Day. I wonder if we're going to hear about that on the mainstream media, or are we going to hear about Kavanaugh and some letter? And, you know, one thing that I haven't heard anybody mention, this seems real similar to what happened with Judge Roy Moore in some yearbook and the lawyers, and he did this and he said that, and I was this years old, and yeah, right. Okay, here we go again. Act one, repeat. Okay, good morning. Thanks for taking the time to tune in today. This kind of a special day, in addition to Constitution Day, I'll bring up a listener. His name is Ted Midward, and I'll let him tell his story and things like that, and how he stumbled upon Liberty Tree Radio and got to tune into this and what he finds interesting. Get some information out there. Ted, are you there?
Yes, sir, I am. Can you hear me?
I got you. 5x5. Coming in good.
Excellent. Good morning, Mike. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate being here with you. It's great to get back together again.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of been bumpy over the last several months. I think you brought me up on your broadcast, what was that, back in April or May. And then the summer got in the way, and now bada bing, bada boom, here we are on Constitution Day. So
yeah, time flies, right?
Yeah. Let's start off. I've heard other people that will interview somebody, and then in the last 3 seconds, they want somebody to get their contact information out, and then you can't hear it because the music's coming up and it's all rushed. So let's start off right off the bat on how people can get a hold of you, or at least listen to your podcast and things like that.
Sure. Well, I run a podcast. I've been on other sites and have done series where I narrate podcasts for certain sites if something interests me. But mainly it's a podcast, and I do it that way instead of live broadcasting because it's a little bit more convenient. It's a little less demanding, and people can pick it up on the run as they like. The site where you can find the content is tedmidward.info, and that's MIDWARD. I started actually doing and recording the podcast in 2016, around the time of the election, and I have been a Liberty Tree Radio listener since about late 2008, early 2009, and it took some digging to find it, but I have to say it's one of my most treasured broadcasts that I tune into and try not to miss. What you guys and Mark have done here is excellent. I can't recommend it enough. And I try to share it as much as possible with my listeners, and I'm sure that the people who tune into my broadcast are probably already aware of it, so I'm kind of preaching to the choir. But I've been out here in I guess, Patriot land and learning things, studying different things, and I just so happened to find, I believe it was one of the videos back from the 90s that Mark had done, maybe America in Peril or one of those same-style videos where he's speaking at a podium on a BitTorrent tracker that I used to go to that had, I hate to use the term conspiracy material, but I think people all know what we're talking about. It's basically alternative media information and history, right? And from that, I found a video of Mark, and I think he was just getting out from behind the wire at the time and was coming back on the air, and happened to catch him on a broadcast with Alex Jones. in early 2008 when he was coming back. So I have been a longtime listener. Now, I am not, and I'm not an everyday listener. I'm not anything like that, but I have tuned in over the years, and I try to make it a point to go into the archives that Spike had run and go and grab the latest broadcasts when I was out getting my stuff ready. I like to listen to broadcasts or podcasts on the way to work, if I've got downtime at work, anything like that. It was more a sort of entertainment. Some people like talk radio. I like it too, but I'm a little bit younger, and I kind of like the edgier Patriot stuff. And Liberty Tree Radio has filled me in on quite a few things, historically speaking. So TedMidward.info is the site. I try not to get too far into the woods on different topics, but I find myself going that way. Think of it more as like a social critic of current issues in America. And some of it is politically incorrect. You probably won't like all of it, and I apologize for that. You can't please everyone, but those are some of the things that you find. I like getting in touch with people like yourself, Mike, and finding new broadcasts, finding interesting things, and just having conversations with them. And I try to keep it to that. I try to tone down on the rants and the criticisms. But anyways, that's a little bit about myself.
Okay, great. So let's see. Now, you also, you have a YouTube page where people can get your stuff, or no?
The YouTube is kind of up in the air at the moment. I've had a number of channels that have been taken down and suspended, and by Twitter, YouTube, the big social media platforms. So the website is probably the best way to catch it. But if you do happen to be a YouTube fan, I think you can just punch in Ted Midward and it should return some results, and you can probably find whatever channel I have up at the moment. But I don't try to make that my main distribution site, because they just ban you. They have people that flag constantly, and you'll have your stuff taken down. So I like YouTube, but I don't try to rely on it.
Okay, very good. It's a definite maybe.
Yeah, exactly.
That's for sure. Now, previously we had discussed the part of about you used the example that people live in a bubble. They live in their house. They get in the car, go to work, go to school, come back home, open the garage door, drive inside, and you don't see them until the next morning. And then you also used an analogy of about your listeners of a pond, and my listeners or Liberty Tree Radio or whoever it is, listeners, that they're all in their pond. And one of the things that you see with the Patriot movement or the people that are just coming up, that they're aware of their pond, but there's an adjacent pond that they're not familiar with. You want to expand on that?
Yeah. I think this is certainly one of the dynamics at play in the Patriot movement. And it's something that's unfortunate, because it took me a while to figure it out, only because when I started getting interested in this sort of material a number of years ago, I didn't have anyone in real life, any friends at school or family members or neighbors, anything like that, that could point me in the right direction. I more or less had to dig and scrape and search and pan for gold, so to speak, to find out certain things. And it takes time to find people that you trust and people that you put stock in. And I find this to be the case with most people on the so-called right wing. We're all sort of meandering in our own little ponds. Some people like going to Breitbart. Some people like going to Drudge. Some people like going to Fox News. And they really – you have your go-to sites or your go-to news sources, and you don't really ever find out anything else. Fox News doesn't really have anyone else who's independent. They don't have like a Michael Savage come on, because he's a competitor in a lot of ways. So I think this is certainly an issue in the Patriot side of things, and I try to make an effort to reach out and sort of get out of my own little pond and go venture into other things and see what I'm missing and kind of compare notes with other people, just as a sort of check to make sure that I'm not too far out in left field, so to speak. But I don't find any fault with the smaller venues like a Micro Effect compared to Alex Jones or Liberty Tree Radio. It's unfortunate, I think, but usually it's I find the smaller independent sites to be the best, to be the most passionate, and to not be the run-of-the-mill sort of go-through-the-motions daily kind of operation like some of the bigger outlets like Fox News. And it's taken time to find the Micro Effects, the Liberty Tree Radios, the From the Trenches World Report. It took me a long time to find these sort of smaller venues, whereas when I first started, the big names hit me right away, like Jeff Rentz's site, Alex Jones material. They're sort of bigger, more popular people, and it takes some time to sort of find the smaller independent folks who have excellent content, but you won't necessarily find them on some of the other bigger Patriot radio stations or websites. So that was my experience, and that's what I was trying to convey, is that if the Patriot movement ever wants to make a serious change or try to implement some things, I just see, as a third-party person kind of coming up through things on my own and having to figure them out, I try to increase communication and get in several different circles just so that I know what's out there. I know what I'm missing if I concentrate on one source too much, and try to make sure that I've got myself aligned with the facts. Some folks, some outlets are better than others, and like I said, I think the smaller independent ones are the better, the more passionate, and I put more stock in them. And certainly the Micro Effect and LTR are two that I have at the top of my list.
Good. Well, you know, when we were talking to you the other day, wanted to talk about how the events of history, on how they tie in with current events, and also we were discussing about Major General Lansdale. Is there, do you want to go off in that direction, or?
Yeah, well, let me just say that it wasn't until, and I got to thank everyone at LTR, both on air and behind the scenes, who make it happen, because it really, Mike, wasn't until I found Liberty Tree Radio and the point of view that Mark came from that it dawned on me that all this is just a matter of us putting up with it, and it doesn't really have to be that way. Mark has a unique perspective in that he doesn't take it lying down or doesn't act like there's nothing we can do about it and throw our hands in the air like other broadcasters. And that's what I found the most amazing about it, and I think why I was why I'm still excited about LTR. They have a unique perspective. It's a truly unique American perspective, and it's going to tie in with, I'm sure, the rest of the content that we're going to speak about here. You mentioned Edward Lansdale, and I'm not all that familiar with him. Most of what I've come to understand has been from you pointing certain things out to me, Mike. So am I correct that this was the man who basically was sent to Southeast Asia to try to figure out how to stop, at the time, Marxism or communism from spreading, right, with I guess, Vietnam, not Korea?
Correct. Well, actually, before he went to Vietnam, he was over in the Philippines. And,
okay.
Yeah, it was post-World War II. I guess how it went that the guy that eventually became president of the Philippines, Ramon Magsaysay, he had his father was a school teacher, and there was one of the uppity muckety mucks that was in his class, and the kid was not really performing well, and so he gave him a failing grade. And so because he gave him a failing grade, they fired his father. So Magsaysay had to pull out of school to help get a job and support the family. And then the Japanese invaded in World War II, and Magsaysay and a lot of other people took to the hills to fight a resistance and insurgency against the Japanese invaders. And then after the war, because Philippines, a lot of different islands and all that, so you have a large area and it's all spread out by these islands, and you've got a mayor here, a military leader over there. And then after the Japanese had gotten pushed out, then a lot of these people, the cronies, the corrupt people, automatically assumed that they were just going to come back into power and everything was going to be business as usual. And there was elections and this and that and appointments, and their military was a little heavy-handed. And then Magsaysay, well, I guess it was the president or somebody higher up in the whole country, saw what was going on, and he wanted business as usual. And so there's got to be some way to get with this Magsaysay guy because he's causing too much trouble. And so he basically made him the Secretary of Defense. And somewhere in this time frame is when he got together with, at the time, Colonel Lansdale. And then they started off by, they would have two little small aircraft, only big enough to hold two people apiece, the pilot and a passenger. And they wouldn't tell anybody where they were going. They'd get out there in the early morning, point to a place on a map, and the pilot, they'd rev up the engines, and they'd take off. They'd land at some of these remote places and go in for a snap inspection. And it was just in shambles. There was nothing upon nothing. It just, these people that had gotten promotions because they're a family member or they're this or they're that, and they thought that it was just manana land. We'll get to it when we need to. There's nothing to worry about. The war's over. We've got everything's back to normal. And so this really started shaking up the military. And then there was a resentment because of the heavy-handed tactics that the military had been using against the peasants. And then also post-World War II is when the communists, the Hucks, had started gaining momentum and things like that. So that's kind of a little bit about a thumbnail sketch of how Magsaysay and the things that had evolved or devolved in the Philippines. Eventually he became president of the Philippines. There was a lot of resistance as to where they wanted to improve the image of the military and would go out here and have them help harvesting crops or fixing roadways and things like that. And there was a lot of pushback against that about, well, that's not what the military's about. And then the problem with the Hucks disrupting the elections and then another aspect of the military protecting the people, so they sent the military in there so the Hucks couldn't, you know, attack people while they were at the polling places and things like that and really straighten the country out. So that's kind of that aspect of about Lansdale. Over to you.
So is it fair to say that General Lansdale, if there was anyone who understood communist or Marxist insurgency of Southeast Asia, it had to be Lansdale. And given that he knew certain things, he was the only one who could really be the architect of how to stop these insurgencies. Is that correct?
I would say so, yes. He's kind of credited with the term of why shoot somebody when you can talk them out of fighting. And because of his background in advertising, that he really realized there was a key to this instead of, you know, trying to put the military against the insurgents that is generally a losing proposition, that if I'd go over here and talk to the people and get to know them and learn their customs and their taboos and be able to view what was going on, what was the grievances, because sometimes in some of these countries, especially post-World War II, you know, didn't have electricity, didn't have running water, didn't have conveniences. Monsoons would come in and wash roads out, and all the people had was just some grievances that they just needed a little bit of help, maybe a dig in a water well or fixing a road so the farmer could get his crops to the market to help out. And then, of course, then the insurgents come in and promise them everything. Oh, we'll do this. It's the corrupt government. And if you help us, then everything will be just fine. And so Lansdale was able to hear what the people's grievances was, and that because of his connection to Ramon Magsaysay, that they started addressing these problems and giving the people security, then they were able to defeat the insurgents. There's the current thinking, there's a couple of lines. One of them is that what they call is an enemy-centric counterinsurgency, and then the other half is a population-centric counterinsurgency. So on the enemy-centric is you basically concentrate on attacking the enemy, and the population-centric one is that you protect the population. So they've tried recently to attempt both of them individually, but now the line of thinking is that it's kind of a 50-50 proposition. So number one, we have to separate the insurgents from their base, which is the population, because the insurgents rely on the population for food, for security, for safe house, for transportation, logistics, intelligence, and everything. And if the insurgents can be cut off from these basic needs, then the insurgency will wither. And then the other half of is to where you'll have small patrols that'll go out and hunt down the insurgents. Does that kind of answer your question?
Yes, yes. And I was wondering, you'd be the person who would probably know the best answer to this. How much of these insurgencies and political dissatisfaction where they're ready to topple the status quo over the past 60, 70 years, how much of this is economic driven versus some idealistic sense of being free and not having someone rule over you?
Well, that's a tough question. Sometimes we have to be careful, because if we listen to what the insurgents say, that they'll pick a cause and throw that out there of about, oh, we're going to help lift the economy up, or you're being crushed by the boot of the evil government. And oftentimes we also see that the cause will change. And in communist insurgency, they have a tendency to pick a marketing slogan that sounds good, but to tell you the truth, it really doesn't mean anything to them, because they're willing to lie and cheat and get into the people's minds and present them as the savior of the people, that if you just support us, we'll make things better, a paradise, and everybody will get along. So I'm not sure of exactly what the true number is. As an example, look at Vietnam, and there seems to be some like Sir Robert Thompson had pointed out that according to the government statistics in South Vietnam, that no more than 1% of the people supported or were part of the insurgency. So technically speaking, Vietnam does not qualify as a people's uprising. A lot of times we hear that Vietnam was an insurgency and that part of it, but it was only just a small, ruthless band of individuals that wanted to take over the government that eventually did. So I have to think about that as to where, which one of it is that, how it was. And, you know, we could also look at an example about Malaya as to where you had a bunch of Chinese that had come into the Malay Peninsula and were squatters, and they were the ones that were behind the insurgency in Malaya, and they really had no economic, historic, political connection to the country of Malaya whatsoever. It was just another, for a loose term, just another communist insurgency. And then, you know, as another example, we could look over here at Fidel Castro in Cuba, that Batista was corrupt and these things were going on and he had his small band and sold the people, oh, economics, and we're going to get rid of this evil Batista guy. But now, well, Fidel's passed away, but there's not a whole lot of improvement that's gone on down in Cuba. People are still driving cars from the 1950s, and you have water. It flows into the city, but only on this side of the road you get water on Monday, and on that side of the road you get water on Tuesday, and you're lucky if you have any electricity. So does that kind of I'll definitely try to look into this and see which ones are really truly economic or political and what that aspect of it is. But does that kind of answer your question?
Yeah, it's not an easy question to answer, and it's something that has bothered me. And I think it kind of boils down to this dynamic. The communist or Marxist rhetoric is very appealing to, say, a peasant class person who's not very educated, not very book studied, and has spent most of their life working out in the field. And I think that Marxist rhetoric has an advantage over, say, right-wing rhetoric, because it's very easy to comprehend, it's very appealing, and most people not knowing anything about a subject, I think the Marxist rhetoric is much more appealing than someone telling you, well, you need to be self-responsible and pull yourself up by the bootstraps, right? I think that's mm-hmm. just sort of human nature. And I think that the North Vietnamese were effectively able to use this to their advantage, because they were dealing with a peasant class that was, I guess, from what I've studied about this, ruled over by like a feudal system of landlords. They didn't necessarily own the land that they were working and producing crops for. So it seems to me that in America with the Patriot Movement, we're fighting an uphill battle because we have to be, you know, intellectually honest. We can't just promise pie in the sky to get people to support us. And it's unfortunate that human nature being what it is, a left-wing rhetoric will be much more appealing and enticing to the average person rather than someone telling you, well, it's up to you, it's your personal responsibility, so on and so forth. Does that make sense, what I'm trying to convey?
Oh, absolutely. It seems like we're almost at a break point right now. Whereas if you look at this last election between Hillary Clinton and President Trump, the country was split almost 50-50 to one side or the other. Hang on for just 1 minute. We got some who coming in, And this sounds kind of like an appropriate song, what we're talking about, a joining together with the band. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Well, join together with the band, ladies and gentlemen. Good morning, this is Mike down here in Arizona land. Today is the 17th of September, 2018, Monday. It's Constitution Day, and you're tuned in to Liberty Tree Radio. Your mind is your primary weapon. Let's see. Oh, one other thing, too. We're sending this broadcast out to Lily Grace Antoinette. The first 30 minutes, we've been interviewing Ted Midward. Sometimes it's he's interviewing me and I'm interviewing him. But it's a good idea because as these thoughts and questions pop into our minds, we can have an open, honest exchange of information. We talked a little bit about the beginning on how Ted's Road to Liberty Tree Radio came about and his observations about where the actual truth is coming from, and it certainly isn't coming from the mainstream media or some of these other bigger quote-unquote patriot radios that oftentimes you're going to find more valuable nuggets of information. Unfortunately, it's like panning for gold. You have to dig a ton of dirt up before you can find an ounce of gold. But when you find that ounce of gold, all your effort seems to be well worth it. Ted, are you still there?
Yes, sir, I am here.
Okay, very good. Now, right when we left off, we were kind of making some comparisons about, you know, the Patriot movement and the thing is, if I go in one direction, then I get all these nasty gram emails about how dare you say this and how dare you say that. And, you know, we don't want to necessarily do a critique, but we can do an honest after-action review. And as to where, because everybody knows what my position is on the what's going on, but for somebody else that may be relatively new or so exposed to it, can you see any, you know, issues or the positives or the negatives, what we're doing right, what we're doing wrong, and what we can do to make things better when it comes to the Patriot movement and the development thereof?
Yeah, well, I agree with you. There's always room for improvement, and there's always honest self-critique whenever you're doing something, and I think it's important to do so and be honest about it. And I don't think that there's too many criticisms that I really have. For the most part, most people are sincere about it. It's not like they're treating it as some career option to be the next Alex Jones or anything like that. It basically comes down to, I think, understanding these principles and ideas and concepts that you talk about on your show every broadcast. Basically, it comes down to a cat and mouse game between us and the other side, and whoever is more wise, more clever, or smarter in their strategy is eventually going to win out. And I think I've come to understand the sort of chess match at work by some of the Patriot history studies that I've undertaken and that everyone else is probably familiar with, but we really don't go back and reflect on what happened in terms of psychological warfare and winning the public support of the American people. And I think it's because most people who are new to it, like myself, we don't really understand these concepts. We can't really see what's most effective and what isn't worth our time and what is. And I kind of think of it like this. When you come on and you talk on your show, Mike, about how our minds are our primary weapon and that everything is a battle for support of the public, we really did see that play out in the 1990s with events like the standoff at Ruby Ridge and then the siege in Waco, Texas. It seems like after those two events, the Patriot movement was bursting with support. They had the moral high ground, so to speak. They were seen as the victims, and the government or the status quo was seen as the evil ones who were at fault. And then if you subscribe to some events of conspiracy history like I do, the bad guys had a tremendous success in turning the people against the Patriot movement with the events of April 19th, 1995 in Oklahoma City. The effect of what happened in Oklahoma City was that it took all the wind out of the sails of the Patriot movement, of the militia movement. Everyone wanted to distance themselves after that event. And we see this You see this sort of play out in what we're talking about with Lansdale and some of the psych warfare and counter-revolutionary operations that, various parts of our government have undertaken since World War II. Look at, who was it? Zbigniew Brzezinski. Wasn't he the one who trained and funded the Mujahideen and Osama bin Laden to use as a proxy against the Soviets? The people in power know these principles in and out, and they know how to sway the masses. And I think the more we can sort of familiarize ourselves with these principles in this cat and mouse game that is happening, the better off we'll be. And I think that is probably the importance of what I picked up from your show. When I listen to the show, if I'm listening live and I have the ability to sit down and listen, I try to take notes and focus on what you're getting at. And I think that's really why I focus and put so much importance on your broadcast in particular. And I find it to be just a gem because no one else is out here talking about these things, making it known to the public and bringing it to the light. And it's these sort of principles and concepts that we need to understand if we want to have success and not constantly be outdone by the enemy with dirty tricks. I know I said a lot there, but feel free to comment and correct me on anything if you think I'm out of bounds.
No, I think you're hitting the nail right on the head. It's trying to do is to convince the people that if you want to be in this patriot militia movement, that there's a little bit more to this than buying a pair of camouflage clothes and some boots and a rifle and a bunch of patches, that there's a tremendous amount of other things that go into it, like the intelligence preparation of the battlefield, field sanitation, the organization, the security, the communications, the medical, the after-action review, the psychological warfare operations and things of about conveying our message to the people, because both sides are competing for that big slice of pie right in the middle. You've got the government and their supporters on one side of the bar graph, and you have the patriots and their supporters on the opposite end, and we're both competing for the support of the people.
Mike.
Yes.
Yeah. Hi. Good morning, and good morning to you, Ted. Glad you decided to do a little puddle jumping this day, guys. Same here. Let's be water striders and glide up across the top of the water. Anyway, can I make a contribution, please?
Sure. Go ahead.
I'll try to give a brief synopsis on what Ted was asking about the, whether it was a political ideology or a monetary or financial economic impetus that makes the communist or fascist, whatever, socialist, more effective. I would say it's a little bit of both, but it appeals to the base nature of men. Because we're going to beat up this rich guy, and we're going to take all his stuff, and we're going to redistribute the wealth, and, it's like we're going to give you some. And, we're going to live in utopia. So, it appeals to our base nature wanting to better ourselves, even at the expense of another. That goes almost to conquest. That's an interesting subject to track down is conquest. It's been happening throughout history. That's what happened to the Native Americans. The other thing is now the what we call a government you know, is basically a your government, my government, Mike's government, our government. But we have bad actors. So we have people with criminal states of mind, or they've been given up to corruption for personal gain, whether it be economic or power and influence. So these men who occupy our government have used it, have weaponized it against us. And through this administrative state, they create monopolies and that. So certain people are given license or franchise to operate in a manner that nobody else can. So it gives them a economic advantage. From there, it can increase their political influence and their power base, no matter what or with who, with whom, in a community or globally. And that being the case, they also control your journalism, your print, your print media, your radio media, and you know, your visual media. You have a lock or a monopoly on these things. You can keep other people out, all right? And because you have everybody a lot of people's ears, you just, like an ad campaign, you just pound it to death and program people. You psyop them. You get inside their decision cycle. Your mind is your battle space, you know. And so if you're not in control of your battle space, somebody else is. Somebody's inside your head, and they're controlling your decision cycle, see. And so that's a big fight there, being aware of those things. The historical sense, you're wondering, what are the first principles? First principles are this: do no harm. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. That goes into the gospel there. And that our Constitution, our founding documents, they were basically to protect life and property. It's almost synonymous or redundant statement, you know, because without life you have no property. Without ownership of your property, you have no life. So, you know, you've got to school yourself on the first principles. And then you find your points of contact through a historical lineage from our founding documents back through what was happening in England, the Magna Carta, and the various other documents that kings have had swords placed at their throat, so to speak, to treat people benevolently. So one of the things is the main thing is communication. And I don't know, I think I said enough already. I should back out. Ted, if I'm trying to get Mike's stuff up, some of the shows up, as many shows I can up, like on YouTube, or, well, I'm usually trying to use real video. That was with Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, I think he started at, but, you know, I'm kind of a neophyte on that, so, you know, it's taking me a little time. But if you want to get any of my contact information, you can get it from Mike. And with that, I'm going to back out and say, well, be well, blessed and deliver, you guys.
Thanks. God bless you. Thank you for your time. Ted?
Yes, yeah. If I can help you any way with showing you how I make simple videos, which is basically a still picture and an MP3, like today's broadcast, I will share with you the best way I know how to do it, and I will get your contact here off the air from Mike here once we wrap up. So thank you for the call. I appreciate it.
Very good. I see we've got about 7 minutes or so left. Time flies when you're having fun. You're going to have you back, Ted. There's no question about that, because I only got I got 4 pages of notes, and we barely made it through one. And so kind of the one thing that Jim had touched on, and it was really odd. I was tuning around the AM dial this weekend, and I'm not going to mention what station it was. It certainly wasn't a right-wing station, but it's those people that talk in a real calm voice, and they present the information like this. But they had a real interesting part, and it was kind of like, oh, we have options, or we have choices, we have decisions to make. And then so it's an option architecture. So they're going to give us certain options, but these people that do advertising, and they use several different examples all the way down to, you know, what kind of going into a store and buying this kind of a mustard or that kind of spaghetti sauce, as to where if you have too many options, you go into a store and there's 50 different brands of mustard, you're basically going to be overwhelmed on the decision of what to purchase. And now the advertisers have come to the realization that if we limit those to only 3 options, the people won't be overwhelmed, and they can actually, what they're actually doing is making a decision of what you can buy or what you will buy by limiting your options. It's an option architecture. And it's kind of like what we're talking about here, of about the Patriot movement and who you're going to listen to, and they're limiting the options on where you can acquire the information and become an informed consumer. And it all still boils back down to psychological warfare, psychological operations, or MISO, military information support operations. Are you following me there, Ted?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think the more we can, the more we can get out on, and I'm going to try to commit to this too, just doing more broadcasts, basically illuminate these principles and concepts, I think the better off we'll be. And that's certainly why I value your broadcast, and I look forward to hearing you. And I totally agree, we need to get together more, communicate more. And if we do nothing, we're just going to have everything taken from us in the end, ultimately. So there's no choice but to try to communicate, try to spread the word, and have some sort of force multiplication. And if I can help anyone out there with any of the tasks that you see me doing, by all means, I'll try to help you as much as possible if you get in contact. So,
beauty. So kind of when we left off there at the bottom of the hour or so, we were talking, or maybe it was right afterwards, we were talking about where the Patriot movement is and where the Patriot movement is going. Some people have described it basically as too many chiefs and not enough Indians. And have any ideas on how to overcome this phenomenon? Or, I mean, I've witnessed it before, and it's like, well, ain't nobody going to tell me what to do. And all we do is keep coming up. It's we're doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. And how do we break this glass ceiling and move forward?
Right, right. Yeah, I've certainly noticed that myself, and I'm certainly guilty of arguing with people back and forth on smaller points. I think that's something that is a dynamic on the Patriot or right-wing side of the fence, is that we kind of like the church schisms in different sects of Christianity. You know, we find the 1% that we disagree on, and we turn a molehill into a mountain. And we need to have some basic common denominator stance that everyone gets behind, and everything else, you let it be a side issue. Whether you want to have Baptist Christianity or Protestant or Catholic Christianity, After the Republic is taken back, you need to leave that to the side. That is not the most important issue at hand. And the problem with the right wing is that we love intellectual discussions and arguments and sparring with people verbally, and then we let it go too far on the stupid stuff that really doesn't matter at the end of the day. The only thing that matters is protecting the republic, keeping our liberty. Everything else is secondary. And I think I suppose that sort of ties back with the brilliance of Marxist rhetoric. It's very simple, and it unites. It does not divide. They do not get off into the weeds between Leninism or Trotskyism. They keep it very simple, and we need to craft a message that it resembles the same dynamic.
Very good. Couldn't have said it better myself. Excellent, Ted. Well, so you'll be back next Monday?
Yeah, if you want to plan on that, let's talk about that off air and see if we can work it out.
Okay, and if it doesn't work, you know, we've got the next Monday or the Monday after that, but like I say, we're just scratching the surface here. We talked the other day that you had found a smoking deal on that book, The Art of Insurgency, that many years ago it was almost $100, and you were able to find a good copy for only $12 total plus shipping and other things. Get back over to examples like T.E. Lawrence, or, you know, I'd certainly like to expand on this example of about where to make an honest assessment and not to hurt people's feelings of about why the Patriot movement keeps failing, and what, like you said, about crafting a message, a marketing campaign, if you will, to get people together. Because, you know, we can look at the examples there, and there may be 1,000 or 100, but we could boil them down to about 10 examples. And what happens is we'll agree on 9 of them. And one of the things that I see is the Patriot movement, then when somebody identifies that one issue that we disagree on, then that becomes the issue. Instead of working forward on the 9 issues that we all agree on, but somehow the communications breaks down and, oh, I can't be with you just because, you know, I want to color my hair this color, and you guys can't be with me unless you dye your hair the same color, or pick up, you know, oh, you can't be with me because you don't have this kind of camouflage clothes, and I don't have these patches, or I don't have this kind of a rifle, and it just turns into nothingness. Is that a correct observation?
Absolutely. I think you're right on the money with that. That happens all too often.
Yeah. Well, I certainly look forward to cranking this machine up sometime in the very near future. I know it's been a long, many, many months since I was on your broadcast. I want to thank you for that. I want to thank you for being on today, and I really look forward, and I'm certainly hoping that the listeners are looking forward to these open and honest discussions about the assessment of where we are, where we want to go, and not be limited by our options by somebody telling us which direction or what spaghetti sauce we have to buy.
Absolutely. No, thank you. The pleasure's all mine. Thank you for all that you do. Thank you, everyone at Liberty Radio and the Micro Effect. God bless you all. There's a woman on my
lap and God bless you too, Ted. Thank you very much. Sounds like we got the music coming in. This is the end of the broadcast. Stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen, to Liberty Tree Radio. And as always, we send this broadcast out to Lily, Grace, Antoinette. There's a lot more to this than just your gun and your camouflage clothes and patches. Your mind is your primary weapon. I'll see you next week. I'll see you Thursday over on The Micro Effect. God bless you. Thanks for tuning in today. Now I'm expressing